Dan to Cody, from Gillette to Rock Springs, this is Let's Talk Wyoming, your weekly dose of Wyoming politics. Because politics may be complicated, but I'm here to break it down and help you make sense of it all. I'm Amy Edmonds, former legislator from Cheyenne. Thanks for being here. Hey guys, welcome to Let's Talk Wyoming. I'm Amy Edmonds, your host. So this week I had a podcast done just talking about some of the political news of the day. An article I wrote for Cowboy State Daily, which I'm not going to talk about, but I will link in the show notes, and a bunch of other stuff. But I dumped that because there's been quite a bit of news this week, as you all may be aware. And I just decided that I really wanted to talk about a few things. So I'm recording this actually on Friday afternoon, September 12th, which is, I should have had a podcast out this morning and I do not. So that's the reason where I'm late, and I apologize for that. This week, we had the murder of a Ukrainian woman in North Carolina, a school shooting in Colorado, and the political assassination of Charlie Kirk in Orem, Utah. Two of those deaths were caught on camera, and we've all seen them, or at least most of us have. It's been all over people's feeds, and that's heavy. That's hard. I don't think we're equipped to see those kinds of things. And obviously, as well, this week, it is the anniversary of September 11th. So I canned the podcast I had done and decided, after a lot of thought, time and thought, that I wanted to talk about the murder, the assassination of Charlie Kirk in Orem, Utah on Wednesday. So this Wednesday, September 10th, Charlie Kirk, who's a political commentator, the founder of a youth organization, Turning Point USA, was murdered in Orem, Utah. The gunman has been caught and is in custody after a two-day hunt. I'm going to be honest with you guys. I was just devastated by this. I was just devastated because I can't believe this country of mine that I love so much has become so divided that someone thought they had to silence this man by killing him. I love this messy, proud, strong country built on liberty and freedom. The notion that someone would kill someone to silence them is hard for me to fathom. And his death feels profoundly senseless. I mean, all the deaths this week felt profoundly senseless. This one just struck hard. So I want to talk about it because I want to talk about how we should think about disagreement and why the way we think about it and the way it's used politically right now is so toxic. And I also want to talk about a way out of that kind of toxic treatment of disagreement. It's going to be this podcast. So Charlie Kirk led a conservative youth movement, like I said, and he did it in a way that I think any honest person who reflects upon it would say it was done with admiration in its speed and its success. I'm going to read you a little bit from Ezra Klein's piece, a columnist for the New York Times. He's more left-leaning, but he wrote what I thought was one of the better, honest views of Charlie Kirk and his life. So he wrote, quote, "You can dislike much of what Kirk believed, and the following statement is still true. Kirk was practicing politics in exactly the right way. He was showing up to campuses and talking with anyone who would talk to him. He was one of the era's most effective practitioners of persuasion. When the left thought its hold on the hearts and minds of college students was nearly absolute, Kirk showed up again and again to break it. Slowly, then all at once, he did. College-age voters shifted sharply right in the 2024 election. That was not all Kirk's doing, but he was central in laying the groundwork for it. I did not know Kirk, and I am not the right person to eulogize him, but I envied what he built. A taste for disagreement is a virtue in a democracy. Liberalism should use more of his moxie and fearlessness. In the inaugural episode of his podcast, Governor Gavin Newsom of California hosted Kirk, admitting that his son was a huge fan. What a testament to Kirk's project," unquote. You know, your opinion of Charlie Kirk is honestly not relevant to the discussion of his murder. People need to understand that. Trying to decide if you should be sad or happy, if you'll be judged for, you know, not for being horrified or happy, is really a grotesque way, I think, to look at this. Because whether you agree with him or you don't agree with him, all decent people can and should come together and agree that violence against anyone is unacceptable. And we should spend this time instead talking about how to get out of this mess, which is why I want to talk about what you know, how we've hit kind of a point in this nation's history and life where we Americans are now constantly and wrongly conflating disagreement with crisis, right? The life and murder of Charlie Kirk is, I think, an example, and I'm going to use it. Because first off, branding political opponents enemies or traitors or vermin, and whether you do that publicly online or just mentally in your head, it's not making an argument. It's teaching a moral code that says dissenters are dangerous. That kind of dehumanizing script lays the groundwork for political violence. It tells young people that those who don't think like us aren't neighbors to persuade, but hazards to eliminate. Crisis talk like that and dehumanizing, it doesn't persuade. It ignites fear, and fear distorts judgment, and it turns violence from unthinkable into thinkable. So if students hearing that disagreement is dangerous, if they hear that again and again, they're going to treat people who they disagree with as dangerous. If you keep calling your opponents enemies and you tell everyone they're a problem, then they're going to be treated that way. And that kind of fear and panic really twists judgment. That's when some people reach for violence as an option. And obviously it was an option for that killer on Wednesday, which is horrifying. And so we all need to do better to reset the tone and make sure that we aren't in any way fueling rhetoric that makes people fear in a way that makes them think that violence can be an option. And I had to do some soul searching myself because obviously, you know, I started a podcast and I'm out here talking to people and people listen to me. And I know that I'm not always perfect. And I don't think any of us are perfect, but I don't think we're necessarily ever going to hit perfection, but we're striving to do better. You know, I watched clip after clip after clip of Charlie Kirk in the last couple of days talking to young people and encouraging them. And there was a theme amongst these clips that I watched. One of them was that when young people would ask him in some variation or another the question of like, what should I do with my life? He would say repeatedly, do good and be good. It's good advice. And so I think we should strive for that good. And listen, I don't think Charlie was perfect either. There are things that he espoused that I don't agree with, but I can completely agree with the character of that man because of the way that he lived his life and the way that he encouraged young people to live it. And also because Charlie and I share a common faith as Christians. I can see the humanity in him. And I think we should all be able to see the humanity in each other. But I think if there's one hard, urgent truth that we Americans must agree upon and that we must embrace, it's that disagreement is normal. Disagreement is healthy. And we need to be raising our kids and creating, you know, educational climates in college campuses or wherever, where everyone understands that disagreement is normal and disagreement is healthy. And so let me go out kind of to the big picture first and talk about the country. So Jonah Goldberg said something after Kirk's murder. He said that our entire system was created so that disagreement could be productive. And I love that. That's a beautiful distillation of, you know, what our country is, which is why I'm saying that disagreement is normal and it's healthy. And it's molded through our system of government to be productive. The founders created it that way. And it has to be productive, right? In a society that's free like ours. Because if it isn't, our country would collapse. The whole point and the reason the founders understood human nature so well and created a system so strong is because they understood that we have to disagree productively. But the problem is it isn't productive when we treat disagreement as a crisis. And then we use that crisis as a tool to demonize and to weaponize. And particularly when we weaponize it personally against people who have opposing views, not the views, the people, right? Now, I'm not talking about disagreements inside policy, inside our government process. We disagree on policy all the time. We absolutely talk about right and wrong, right? I'm a conservative Republican. I will tell you why I believe strongly that free markets are superior, why I believe government closest to the people is superior, why I believe, you know, as a strong social conservative, why I believe that family is the most important unit, that parental rights are important, why life begins at conception and should be protected. I could go on and on and on. But when we take those policy differences and we start demonizing others for holding opposite views instead of sticking to discussing the policy, that's when we head into that toxicity. And that's when productivity ends. So, you know, Charlie Kirk himself, when he started Turning Point, every time that he would go to a college campus, pretty much he faced an organization from the left that wanted to try to shut down his speech. And those folks, I think, in some ways need to start doing some soul searching about why they wanted to suppress his speech. I think they probably would tell you, I mean, I'm sure they know why, because they believe that what he's saying is wrong. But the correct response to somebody saying something wrong is not to shut them down. It's to persuade. I think we need, and everyone else needs, to throw out those old political playbooks that we've had for the last 5, 6, 7 years and start embracing the idea that agreement, that disagreement is normal, healthy, and that it needs to be productive. And the way it's productive is through persuasion, right? Whatever you thought of Charlie, he was in the business, as Ezra Klein said, of changing hearts and minds. I mean, Klein said it as he was one of the era's most effective practitioners of persuasion. And that's exactly right. He was. However you feel about Charlie, he was in the business of changing hearts and minds. That's supposed to be the American way. Again, we built a country on the idea that our disagreement should be productive, that debate leads somewhere. And I saw it up close when I served, right here in Cheyenne at the Capitol. You'd go in that chamber, you'd look at bills, you'd make your case, you'd take your lumps and vote. There are winners, there are losers, and we move on. A lot of what passed was hammered out in compromise through the whole process. That's not a weakness. That's not toxic. That's how we adults practice civic adulthood. And this is what we need to impart on these young people. We're in a bad place if demonizing each other feels normal. We've got to reclaim our civics, because disagreement is completely ordinary. It's completely healthy. People aren't going to affirm your views, and that doesn't make them villains. We have to stop teaching kids that speech is violence, right? And that non-affirmation is harm, because speech isn't violence. The minute you treat it like it is, you've handed people a moral excuse to reach for something other than words. We need to persuade, not purge people. That's how we cool the temperature. That's how we keep our republic. Holding a view counter to someone else is not violence. And that's whatever the view is, because your view, which is not to use persuasion, not to argue points, not to stick to those points, but instead is simply to demonize people who don't immediately acquiesce to your view. And demonizing those people in an attempt to what? To shut them down. Regardless of the killer, and I know we'll have lots of, speculation about everything. Charlie Kirk was killed for the things that he said. I think we know that already, given what we know about the weapon, the murder weapon and the bullets. Charlie Kirk faced constantly being not allowed to come onto college campuses for the things that he said. The goal was always to silence him. Disagreement is not violence, and people don't have to share a particular view. And we're never going to, right? We're never going to. We are all always going to disagree. It is better to teach young people that disagreement is completely normal. So I went through a lot of videos. And what I saw again and 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 again were young people coming to the mic and telling Charlie Kirk that he was perpetuating some kind of violence. That was just so shocking. That idea is so harmful to a free society like ours. It's very, very harmful to a free society. The idea is for harmful. We need to all, whether you're on the left or the right, just stop that kind of thing. And we need to start teaching our young people, again, that disagreement is normal and healthy. We need to stop supporting people who want to keep doing this. We need to sit down with the advocates that we may know and be like, hey man, you got to stop doing that. You got to stop demonizing people. Let's stick to the policy. Calling kind of ordinary dissent harmful, it's a rhetoric. It's a trick. I get it. I mean, I understand it. I understand why activists on both sides do it. But what it does is it shuts people up without ever winning the actual argument. It collapses debate into submission without any actual intellectual victory. And when you make persuasion impossible, you're not going to get peace. Okay? And you're certainly not going to get real conversion to your ideas. What you do is you pressure people into silencing them. That's all that you get. You've not changed their minds, because there's a difference between respect and compulsion. I can treat you with dignity, and I hope that I do that. I can listen in good faith, and I can still disagree with your claims about sexuality, human nature, whatever public policy idea you can come up with. That's what being an adult, a civic adult, means. But right now, particularly on our college campuses, amongst our youth, we see young people that don't think that way. They think disagreement is crisis. They think disagreement is bad. People who do not agree, people who do not affirm my worldview, are bad. It needs to be cast out of our society. We need to not tolerate it. We need to be rid of it. We need to educate it out of our kids, right? We need to. In any climate, we have to learn to agree to disagree. I've seen people posting since Charlie's murder. I've seen a lot of people doubling down on that kind of rhetoric, trying to equivocate. I'm against violent, but you know the old rule. Maybe you don't know, but the rule is when you write a sentence that says, I think this, but, and then you say that first part that you said is completely negated by the second part. If you have to qualify something like, I believe in free speech or I'm against violence, but you're not. And I've seen a lot of that, right? He was a terrible human being. I don't like violence, but he was a terrible human being. Again, the only reason that folks think that he's a terrible human being is because he espouses views they don't agree with. In doing that, you're demonizing a life. You're demonizing a father, a husband, a brother, a son. You demonized him. That's not how free societies operate. We have Supreme Court cases where the courts reject orthodoxy. The state can't prescribe what citizens must say or believe. That principle is not partisan. It's part of the bedrock of our republic. When institutions, whether it's schools, a college campus, you know, corporations, HR departments, whatever, they smuggle in this kind of compelled speech through manuals or, you know, community standards, they're bypassing the constitutional spirit. And these kinds of habits are getting embedded into our culture right now. And they cannot and will not sustain our pluralism in our republic. They're terrible for our country. And we all have to fight against it. We all have to be proud and passionate about what we believe in, certainly, but we have to fight against the idea that suppressing people's views are good. Our entire system is built on the idea that we need to disagree productively. Calling people bigots who disagree with you is not productive. History is full of those people suppressing people's speech because they couldn't make the intellectual victory. We're all going to disagree, and that's okay. Again, disagreement is super, super healthy. It's super healthy. We need to learn that in every possible way. We need to disagree productively. We need to stop demonizing. And so I want to talk a little bit about persuasion because I think it's really important. That's the whole point of Charlie Kirk's life, whether you agreed with him or not. As Ezra Klein said, he showed up and did politics the right way. He practiced the art of persuasion. He gave his opponents the mic and allowed them to speak. He didn't try to shut them up. So we need to really foster a climate where we use persuasion. Because here's the thing, if you have to demonize other people, you don't have a persuasive point, which is why we should choose persuasion. Because in convincing people, not demonizing opponents, we're going to end the kind of climate that led to political violence, right? Because we all know politics is arithmetic. You win by addition, right? Not by subtraction. Right now, though, a lot of our public political life runs on subtraction. We shame people. We exile them. Let's let go of that. We try to own people. We own the libs, right? Whatever. It feels good in the short term, but it's not going to work because it doesn't change anything, and it just raises the temperature for everybody. If you want out of this cycle, we have to learn that there's only one way, which is to convince people of the rightness of our cause instead of marinating them in the badness of our opponents. I'm going to repeat that. There's only one way we're going to get out of this, and that's by learning that we need to convince people of the rightness of our cause instead of marinating people in the badness of our opponents, because that's the only way that we're going to sustain our republic. If you treat politics like war, people are going to start looking for soldiers or becoming them themselves. That's why we've got to end the name-calling and the demonizing. Your enemy, you know, blah, 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 traitors, blah, 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 makes us think of people as subhuman. And that's the problem, right? When you begin to remove people's ability to see the humanity in others, they slowly lose themselves. Then there's a high probability that some fool will act upon his fear and his anger, like we saw Wednesday in Orem, Utah. And there's so much more power in persuasion. And that's what we should be getting at. So there are three virtues in persuasion that really show their superiority to demonizing people. Okay. The first is legitimacy. When people change their minds freely, when it's not by the sword, as I said earlier, that outcome is earned and it's final. Persuasion creates real legitimacy. When you build a movement on persuasion, you have it. There's a durability. Persuasion sticks. And that's the other part. Durability. Persuasion sticks and it lasts. When you convince somebody of the rightness of your cause through persuasion, through your points, there's a durability there. It's going to last. And then finally, there's a reciprocity, right? And this is the point that is, so this is something I think is really important, because if you grant your opponent the moral agency of being persuaded, you leave that space open to also be persuaded. In other words, if you treat people as persuadable, they're often persuaded. But if you treat them as an enemy, they're going to act like your enemy. So most of the time we see in politics, you know, debates and other things, we see them as character trials anymore. And we need to stop it. We need to stop it, because all we're trying to do is to persuade people about the wrongness of some other person. I mean, that is just intellectual laziness. It's lazy and it's dangerous, because again, if you treat people as evil, they're going to act as your enemies, right? Persuasion is the most important thing. So let's flip the script. Let's stop saying so-and-so is bad. And let's start saying this policy hurts because of X, Y, or Z, or this policy helps for this reason. Let's absolutely erase the so-and-so is a bad guy idea completely from us. It needs to start somewhere. We should start with all of us. Let's persuade. Because persuasion is not weakness. It's a discipline. And it's harder. It's much harder than just demonizing people. So I hope we can do more to persuade and to not demonize. And I hope when these kinds of things happen, we think about, not about scoring political points or, you know, whether people are going to think good or bad of us if we don't like the right person's thing or shame the right person for saying something or jumping all over the right person. I hope we instead spend our time thinking about how can we get out of this? How can we get away from this? And what I would say is we need to teach kids, we need to teach ourselves again that disagreement is completely healthy and normal. And that we need to show kids that disagreement is productive in our system of government. And that's where we take our disagreements to. We take them into the government. We put them there. We don't ever, ever, ever demonize and use violence. Because trying to win by demonizing people, we're just trying to make our enemies smaller, right? Meaner. Somebody decides that force is the only way then. That's what happens. We give them that space. I was watching all those videos, and the one thing that I saw very consistently was a kind of respect that Charlie Kirk had for the power of persuasion. He would ask people their names. He would use their names. He would ask them for their story. I hope that in that, at least in that, even if you absolutely detest Charlie Kirk, if you think everything he stands for is vile, what I hope you can take away from this is that he was practicing an art that we should all practice. We should all be better at this. We should all be able to look somebody in the eye who we disagree with, ask them for their story, hear what they have to say, disagree with them, make our points, but make them persuasively and disagree respectfully. Disagreement is normal. I can disagree with you and I should still treat you with respect and vice versa. So I hope we take that away from all of this. It's been a tough week, guys. I'm sorry this podcast was late. I was just marinating in what I wanted to say and how I wanted to say it. So it took me some time. You're not going to get this. You're not getting this until the start of the weekend. It's Saturday when you're going to get this, or later. I hope you have a wonderful weekend. If you don't hear this till later, I hope you're having a wonderful week. I hope you are enjoying beautiful Wyoming. Spend some time with your family. One takeaway I had from listening to Charlie Kirk's wife is that he started to practice, after they started having children, of honoring the Sabbath and putting his phone away for 24 hours. I love that. I hope you all think about that practice. I'm going to start trying that practice. Get off your devices. Stop watching all of the garbage. Stop participating in all of the garbage and spend a day without it. Talking to your loved ones, going for a hike, hugging your dog, putting your toes out in nature, sitting in the sun, watching the moon rise, whatever it is, go do that for 24 hours and get off of everything else. Okay, guys, I hope you have a wonderful week or weekend in Wyoming. Until we talk again, take care. Bye-bye.